interview with Henry Wilkins, W-I-L-K-I-N-S, State Representative, Pine Bluff, Arkansas, June 16th, 1974.
And I'd like first, if, Mr. Wilkins, if you just tell us a little bit about your own background and then how you got involved in politics.
Do you think I need to come clean?
That's fine.
Well, I was born here in Arkansas in Pine Bluff, Mississippi, and with the exception of the times I taught at the University of Pittsburgh and worked at Phelps Stokes Foundation in New York. I've, in the Korean conflict, I've been here, and I've been interested in politics since I was in elementary school and high school and in college. And then I became involved with the Democratic Central Committee in Jefferson County whenever the committee would allow blacks to participate, and that was approximately 1964. We had a chairman who said no blacks could participate as long as he was alive, and after his demise, blacks were able to participate, and I was elected to the Democrat Central Committee. Then I worked in several campaigns, congressional campaigns. I've just been generally involved in politics and community affairs. And then in 72, I was elected to the Arkansas State Legislature from District 54. Which is north and west Pine Bluff.
What did your father do here?
My father was a janitor in charge of a building up to him.
Not at the college?
No, public, private building.
You did serve in the Constitutional Convention?
Yes, in 1968 I was elected to the Arkansas 7th Constitutional Convention, where I served as vice chairman of the Municipal Government Committee.
And then you went to... You teach part-time, you say, in
political
science here?
I teach part-time, right. And I work in development about 80% of the time.
At the college?
Yes. Federal programs and community relations.
And you work for Governor Bumpus in the senatorial race?
Yes.
Have you done any analysis of precinct returns from that race?
Just in my, just in Pine Bluff. I haven't done it statewide. I'm going to do that. In our county, we carried practically all of the black precincts except one, as I remembered, and that's one I'm going to investigate because it always turns up different from the other precinct. And talking with the governor Monday, they've done an analysis, and as I understand it, we did carry the black precincts all over, and he didn't spend a quarter, didn't spend any money. We've had I was particularly incensed during this campaign because it was an attempt made to buy the black vote. And this practice has been going on for several years, except it was accelerated during Rockefeller's first try for office in 64. It was a lot of, he recruited a lot of blacks and put them on the payroll, made field workers out of them. And on election day, money flowed because he had plenty of it, so much per car and this kind of thing. So you get these groups that surface every 2 years and claim that they can deliver the black vote. And we have one such group, the Arkansas Independent Voters Association, and it's comprised primarily of a bunch of preachers that run it. And each year they would, every 2 years, say, well, we can deliver the vote for X, the black vote for X number of dollars. And in 72, McClellan employed this group. And at that time, I couldn't say anything about it because I had my hands full running my own race. And I didn't say anything, but this time I did not have opposition. And I thought this was an opportunity to strike the death blow, and I think that's what we've done because they didn't carry the black vote. And Mr. Fulbright lost by about 2-1. So I don't think they're going to be viable anymore. And of course, during Rockefeller's and his subsequent election in well, his first try in 64 and his subsequent election in 66, he got about 92% of black vote each time. And generally, he employed people year-round. For example, I know a janitor, maintenance man on our campus, that all during the year, when Rockefeller was governor, he received a check for about $80, about $20 a week. And consequently, he was certain in Rockefeller's coming out. It's not to say that Rockefeller did a lot of good for the state and helped change politics, and certainly we're appreciative of that. But it sort of did something to the blacks the kind of money that was being spent. And each, every election, people wanted jobs and wanted money and this kind of thing. So I think in that sense, it was a little detrimental to us. But I think Mr. Bowman has demonstrated in his three campaigns that you didn't have to have money to win, although he didn't take, didn't get the kind of percentage against Rockefeller. That was only a serious campaign. The 72 campaign was no problem for Governor Bumper.
But you think that because Rockefeller was willing to spend all that money, it set black political development in a sense back a little bit?
I think so, in terms of this matter of deciding upon the candidate on the basis of issues,
right,
what he can do in solving problems. I think so. Now, McClellan employed it. In fact, he bought.
But it did work with McClellan?
It worked with McClellan.
But it didn't work with Bumper?
No, but for one reason. No, but one reason it worked with McClellan is that it's difficult in Arkansas. Over the last 15 years or so, I've watched it. It's difficult to get black people out in Arkansas twice in a row. And so when Pryor got in that runoff, the black vote didn't turn out as it did in the preferential primary election. And another thing, the McClellan people effectively employed this. They sent people out in the countryside to tell the blacks in eastern Arkansas, the election's over, don't go out Tuesday. And then we didn't have a lot of local runoffs. And that helped. That's just one fact, of course, in Mr. McClellan's re-election. And one would have thought that possibly the Bumpers would have had a problem with Fulbright in terms of the black vote, but it didn't materialize.
Didn't Fulbright spend an awful lot of money on that?
Yes, about $1 million.
Money on the black vote?
Oh, yes. Well, as far as we can see, about 63,000 up to this point. Now, that's what he has filed, man, because I'm convinced it's much more than that. But there's no way of proving that because of, I know one guy that received $3,000. He has a public relations firm, and this money didn't show because he got a subcontract from the regular public relations. So I doubt since that money will ever surface. Nobody happened to know that he got $3,000 for literature distribution and other things.
The black staff member on Fulbright staff raised objection about him hiring a white to direct that campaign. Reading the press accounts of that, he seemed to be quite angry about it the first day. The second day, he was less angry, but said his objection was to the having a white overseer in effect, but that he felt the use of money was legitimate in terms of carpooling and this sort of thing.
Yes, I'm familiar with this staff worker, and he was on his way out anyway. And of course, one of the reasons that they didn't allow him to handle the money, and I'm partially responsible for that, because during the McGovern campaign, I was running a campaign. The McGovern committee sent money down to me, and by this day, I mean, he was handling the finances for among blacks for McGovern, the McGovern committee. And subsequently, I learned that he didn't bring all of the money. In fact, he didn't bring half of it. And I went to him later and talked with him about it, and nothing was ever done. So I just assured him he wouldn't have any finance for any Democratic campaign anymore. And some other people protested. In fact, they gave him $9,000. And we know this. The co-chairman of the McGovern committee told me this. And up until a few months ago, he hadn't turned in receipts for the four receipts. And this was to help all the black candidates running because certainly we were carrying McGovern in our campaign. And so this was one time. So he was on his way out, and then they brought this guy in. And so the night before he made his press conference, apparently they got to him, and he changed his mind. But he was rather warm about it.
How do you assess how much of the money that is spent on getting the black vote out is legitimate?
Are you referring to percentage? Or what?
Any way you want to attack that question.
How much is used for literature distribution, for carpooling, and for legitimate election day activities, and how much is just pocketed someplace?
Well, on the basis of my experience with these organizations, especially this one organization, Arkansas Independent Voters Association, I doubt seriously whether 35% the money actually gets legal election day expense, a legitimate election day expense. That's, most of it's left hip pocket money. And I think their performance this time demonstrate. See, it didn't take much. They built their reputation during Mr. Rockefeller. It didn't take much to sell Mr. Rockefeller to black people, especially some of the candidates that were running against him. So that wasn't really no accomplishment. And most of these ministers, they've been discredited anyway, you know. They just don't have a reputation because they're self-seeking and it's generally known. So I would say about 35%, especially with this particular group that's been in the business of selling votes for the last, since 64.
Did they hurt themselves in the McClellan situation?
That's one fact I had considered that, but as I looked at the people who were the so-called black leaders that were supporting Fulbright, I have some serious doubts as to whether this hurt them very much. And I didn't see any evidence of it, and I didn't hear any comments, and I got around the state for bumpers, and it didn't seem that this was held against them. Because some of the same people surfaced.
Pardon me, please. Hello, how are you?
Hi.
That's my wife, Josetta.
My question is really driving, I'm just trying to understand the black vote in Arkansas, how it responds to money as opposed to issues and candidates, and how much the two are related.
Well, I think if this, in this past election, that we had more response to the issues, the candidate, and his program than in previous elections. I think there's several factors now. They made much of a change, I don't think, since 72, since McClellan race in 72. However, we've had a lot of union activity. We've had more blacks hired in the last 4-6 years in responsible positions in private business and some of the other industries, railroads and this kind of thing. And now they're a little, and some of them are already unionized. So you have more of a response, I think, to issues and this kind of thing, rather than back to the time when it didn't make much difference whom a black voted for, what candidate, that he wasn't going to get anything out of it. So the idea was, you know, I'll take something on election day. And this was it, because I'm not going to go to him for any favors. I'm not in any business. He's not going to help me. You know, this was his general attitude. And so I think we've seen a change. And then during the McClellan campaign, nobody spoke out and tried to expose these groups that were selling votes. And I think the fact that I was a state representative and then I was joined by some others, that this, you know, carried some weight. We had a press conference that carried on TV networks and the newspapers. And then again, too, you can't escape. Mr. Bumpers hadn't done anything directly for blacks as such, but his program so far has been geared toward poor people, and which includes blacks of color, and education, this kind of thing. So I'm sure that this helps. Yeah, the government has a lot of charisma.
Basically, the black vote was divided. Is that? And Bumpers spent very little, you say, on insofar as even carpool money and this sort of thing?
That's right. In Al-Qaeda, we didn't. Any carpool money was done by some private individuals who were interested in government support and paid it out of that pocket, not out of the campaign committee money. And that was very little in this county, I know.
And was that from white sources?
Yes,
or
white sources. And but I had several people, and I paid my own expenses to go travel a different place, and I had several other people. We paid our own expenses. We didn't get any reimbursement or anything from the governor's office. He hired one field man, black, and a lady to work in the office, a black lady. They would just pay the salary and expenses. But other than that, no group was formed there. I did notice one thing, that you had some of your professional vote sellers who've been involved in this business, supporting Fulbright because that's where the money was. Then you had your black, some of your black, a majority, I would say, of your black intellectual, some of your middle class blacks supporting Fulbright. And, of course, this was generally true across the state in terms of white people. Any county you'd go into, the white power structure, the bankers and financial institutions and other financial institutions were supporting them, and many of your local officials. As I remember at the last count, out of 135 legislators, there were only six of us that were for governor of office, you know, at least vocally, publicly, anyway. So this might tell you something about. And they were soundly beaten. So I think this might portend good things for the state in the future.
Since you've been involved in politics in this state, what have been the major changes?
In terms of?
Political changes.
Political change? Well, more, obviously, more black participation and a willingness of the white Democratic Party workers and so forth to accept blacks and try to engender some programs that would be beneficial.
When did that start?
I would say this started probably about 1970, probably 1970, 72, get a lot of emphasis in this direction.
So it's just been recent then?
It's recent, right. Now, of course, when Rockefeller was governor, he appointed a number of blacks to boards and commissions and brought them into his office. But I'm referring to in terms of Democratic politics. It's just recent because Governor Faubus, and I had to play to, or he did play to, the redneck vote and this kind of thing. Although I don't think he's that kind of person. I've never known him to be. I don't think he cares, you know, whether he's black or white, but he was a demagogue politician, so.
Well, it wasn't until, 1970 that you had the first... When did the first black get in the state legislature?
72.
72?
And this was because of reapportionment.
And all four of you got it at the same time?
Right. And I'm the only black outside of Pulaski County. The other three are from Pulaski County.
Do you see much growth in that in the next 6 years?
Yes, I see. I know now we have about 10 House districts that... We have a majority of black voters, and possibly excluding Dr. Jewell's seat, two others over in eastern Arkansas. Well, one other in eastern Arkansas that I know of, and another one south Arkansas, down in Chico County, where you have them.
But why do you think there was no increase this time in the number of black legislators?
Well, again, this sort of fragmentation with the blacks during the Rockefeller tenure, going over to the Republican Party, and we had some blacks that possibly could have won, some more blacks in 72, but they were running on a Republican ticket, and I don't think I see any Republican winning, even in a majority black district, not in 72, not in 74.
And this were there many blacks running as Republicans in 74?
Not in 74, in 72.
Hasn't it steadily decreased since 1970?
It certainly has, right, because the financing drug.
For one,
because the financing dried up?
Yeah. Okay. When Rockefeller, he was putting a lot of money into it.
But these other seven districts with black majority are at least very close to 50%.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you feel there was no increase there this year?
Well, one, the Democratic Party in Arkansas will not finance any candidate. Just as I told you, I'd like to raise my money. And most of it came out of my left hip pocket. I spent $9,000, $3,000 in the primary, and they tried to get me in the general election. And I spent another six of record. And in the meantime, my Republican opponent and other Republican candidates were getting materials printed free, almost at cost, and they were getting all kinds of money to finance the campaign. Plus, the Republican organization cared more on election day. And in the Democratic primary, nobody cared you. In the November general election, I received some money from the McGovern Committee, but other than that, and a few friends, but other than that, there was no organized effort on the part of the Democratic Party. So, for example, this year, the Republicans wanted to field some black candidates in these districts we just mentioned, but in my own district, the Republican candidate that ran against me in 72, they told him they could only pay his filing fee, which is $225, and he said, no dice. So this is one factor. Then, as another factor, in these districts are in eastern Arkansas, where you have a large like most of the blacks. And down in South Arkansas, one county, Chico County, has had more black registered voters. It's in April of 1966, the black registration exceeded the white registration. That was in 66. The county judge down there, the acting appointed county judge, was working with me on a congressional race, and that's how I happen to know this. But they haven't been able to elect anybody. And one factor is the money. Another factor is the level of education and participation. You still have the this plantation mentality among a number of blacks. And, of course, and they don't go out to vote, as they do in Jefferson County, urban counties, Pulaski, and elsewhere, over in, even over in Sebastian County and elsewhere. So that's one problem. So those two factors, I think, matter.
When you speak of plantation mentality, what do you mean by that?
Well, I mean that these guys are, most of them are either sharecroppers or descendants of sharecroppers, and they're still imbued with the idea that they're not going to get anything out of the white person. For example, if the person who domestic over in Eastern Arkansas who might have been rehabilitated from the farm, sharecropping, etc., she would figure that somebody come out and said, let's vote, after she went to work, got up probably 6 o'clock, went out to a kitchen to work, and somebody came by when she got off at 5:30 or 6 o'clock. So let's go out to vote before the polls close. She said, what the hell? Why should I go? You know, I'm going back to that same kitchen tomorrow morning. This kind of thing. She can't see the future gains in terms of more better education for her kids, or poor medical care for the working poor, and this kind of thing. You know, she can't visualize that this time because of her past reputation of the candidates, white candidates, etc.
See anything changing that in those areas of Arkansas?
Yes, I can see with more industrialization. This kind of thing I can see, and we are locating plants over there. And I can see in the next, they said 5-6 years, I can see I see a definite change.
Well, in those areas, are unions playing a major role in political education?
I don't think so. As you know, we have the right to work law in Arkansas, but some of the plants that locate here have unions. And I don't think that the FLCIO has done what it could have in terms of educating the blacks. We still primarily depend on ministers, because this is fast changing with some black elected officials and this kind of thing.
What is the potential for creating an effective statewide organization of elected black officials?
Well, we've discussed that, four of us, and we think the potential is here, and that's what we're going to work on. We think we'll have a good opportunity. Of course, the blacks are no more unified or monolithic than the white community. So you're going to have varied interests, and you're not going to get all of these competing groups to unify. But I do feel that we can get a majority of the people who want to see black and white move forward. I think we can get an effective organization.
How important is the church and the ministries in black politics? Or does it differ by section? Let's take the East, the cities.
Yes, they still, yeah. Ministers still play a great role. Because
How do they play that role?
In terms of endorsing candidates, allowing them to come to church and speak, and just letting the sisters and brothers know this would be a good man, and working in community organizations, you know, these various civic, political, oriented organizations. And, of course, when we had many of the civil rights struggles and so forth in the East and Arkansas involved ministers, you know, leading the way. For example, this Arkansas Independent Voters Association, which is, hopefully has been discredited, it has practically all of the leaders that were listed in the report from the Secretary of the Senate, practically all of them were ministers. You know, so although it might be minimal, they're still playing a role because they got congregations, you know. Although it's not to the extent they can see.
There we are. The least industrialized, the more powerful, more impact that the minister has?
Yes, I would conclude that.
With the reverse being true, that the more urbanized and industrialized, the less.
Right.
And in that case, is it the political elected? Is the elected Black leader playing a more important part than the minister?
I think, yes.
Power shifting from the church to the elected
officials,
officials?
Right.
What percentage, would you say majority of the rural Black ministers fit into the category you described?
No, I wouldn't say that. I couldn't say that. I would say probably you'd have maybe 35-40% perhaps that would fit into that category. You have some who honestly seek to improve a lot of their parishioners and so forth, and who are not just out to get some money, you know, to make a buck off, fast buck.
But does that category participate in the political process actually?
Some of them. I think a small percent. Yeah.
Is it possible to get
on our? No, majority of them aren't actively of the balance, whatever the balance. They're not actively engaged. In fact, you have some of your fundamental Baptists, and that's what most of the Blacks in Arkansas are, who don't believe in, you know, participating in politics, or tying the church in with politics. So many of them are not active, but usually in the church you're going to have some deacon or somebody, you know, who's going to be talking to them. They're not all ministers that exercise this kind of political leadership.
When you say regardless of who it is in the church that exercises that political role, mm-hmm. about a third, about 35%, ain't it primarily for the money, and about two
yes.
thirds are not?
Right, I would say that.
So that I'm trying. All right, the other group, say the two thirds that are mm-hmm. looking for the candidate that they think is going to best serve the interests of the people whose votes they can mm-hmm. influence.
You don't know what percent of that do I think would be actively involved? Is that your question?
Yeah.
Maybe hard to estimate that, but I would say think that. Probably about half of the remainder would probably be interested in some kind of way. They might not go out and endorse candidates, but they would help push voter registration, this kind of thing. Now, we've had a lot of those who didn't participate in past. They would gladly participate in voter registration and some education programs. And they may not tell the Black parishioners whom to vote for, but they would certainly say, go out and vote, you know, exercise your right. So I would have to count them as being friendly and helpful.
Do they get involved though in such activities as carpool arrangements?
Yes, the other group that we mentioned, not the last group that we were talking
about. I'm talking about the last group.
No, mm-mm. Not the majority of them, no.
It's our impression that fundamentalist religion in Arkansas has an important impact on politics in the state.
Maybe that's right.
You said that most of the Blacks are fundamental Baptists.
Is right.
What is there, or is there anything in the theology of fundamental Baptists that would have some impact on the way Blacks see politics in this day? I didn't phrase that very well, but maybe you understand what I'm trying to
say. I know what you're saying, but I don't know very much about Baptist. I'm a United Methodist, and I don't know very much about, except that fundamental Baptists have these.
Why did you say fundamental Protestantism?
Protestantism. Really, I don't know. I think a lot of it is the emphasis on the other world and politics is evil and this kind of thing, you know, better not to bother
with
it.
But is that changing?
I think so. I think with these new groups that we mentioned coming in, Blacks' incomes rising and working in these factories where you're going to, if they're unionized, you're going to have some discussion in the union about what candidate is more favorable to organized labor. I think this will necessarily change, and is changing.
I mean, the emphasis on otherworldliness is changing
as
people get more and more mobile, socially.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
And also more and more economic resources,
right? Excuse me. Right, that's what I can.
But as an institution, though, the church, the fundamental Protestant church for Blacks is still an extremely important institution,
right? Yeah, but for one.
Maybe the most important social institution?
I think at this time, yes, it's probably so because of this fact that you can get to a number of whites. If I want to talk to some whites, I can go to the Lions Club, the Kiwanis Club, or the Civitan Club, the Optimist Club, and several other City Beautiful Club. with the majority of blacks, the church would be the place to go. When I wanted to, I spent my time, when I started campaigning, making the churches in my district, because I felt I could get a large group together and talk with them. And with the exception of a few fundamentalist ministers, they would allow me some time. They would make me wait until the near the end of the service, and they hold service about a couple of hours, and you got to sit through all this business. And then they might let you say a few words. In some cases, others would, cooperate with you. So for that reason, among blacks, that's a very important institution. We can get to a large number of them. And we have some fraternities and sororities and the Masons and the Elks and so forth, but you don't have a lot of blacks belonging to those as you would the other Rotary Club, etc. So, that's the reason you can communicate with them. Okay. Direct access.
Following that up, thinking about running a campaign, you're a black state representative. Obviously, the personal contact's important, the churches and so on. Now, what about media? If you suppose you had the money to put on a campaign in Pine Bluff, would you buy television or radio or newspapers or direct mail? How would you communicate?
Radio. This is what I did. Radio, direct mail, and very little newspaper. And no TV.
Why not use the traditional political media like television and newspaper?
Because in a district with 19,256 people, you're wasting money on TV. You can't buy all three channels. You wouldn't have enough money to buy all three channels. And a lot of people are going to switch to it, as many voters do.
What I'm saying, suppose you had the money to do anything you wanted to. Are there media that are more effective in communicating information to blacks and other media?
Certainly. The radio, these black-oriented radio stations, if you have a district that's 75% black like mine, then I would use KCAT, the black-oriented station, and a number of blacks listen to the largest radio station, KOTN. That's where I bought my time. And then I would depend most on personal contacts and handouts at grocery stores and supermarkets and so forth in my district where the blacks...
What percentage of your district is black?
74.6.
How much emphasis in your time do you give the white voters in your district?
Well, to be very frank with you, I get more, or just about as many, inquiries and requests for certain things in the legislature on certain issues and so forth from, especially during the last session. Perhaps more because, including people outside of my district, the whites outside of my district, then going to lessons than I did from black. And I spend a great deal of my time now with the whites in my district and whites from other districts. You see, we just went to single member districts in 72, and a lot of people still haven't realized, and they see that you are representing, they still think it's the same old way. Well, I can't turn them down because I don't know when they're going to redistrict. Or when I'm going to run for the office, it'll be citywide or countywide, or something of this nature. So, but I do spend a great deal of time with them.
Okay, how about in campaigning?
Well, during my campaign, as I said, the primary campaign, I didn't have very much money. In either one, in November general election either. But I had a white candidate who lived in one of my four all-white precincts. And so I said, well, I'm not going to campaign at all, I think. And then I had this black lawyer who was well-known, been practicing here for 30-some years. And so I just decided, and I had some white Democratic Party members who said, we're going to talk for you, and we're going to work. So I didn't bother it. I did three or four mailings, and I didn't mail anything out there. And I picked up 41% of the vote in the Democratic primary. Then in the November general election, I still didn't do very much. I did a mail out for direct mail campaign for them. And then I depended upon these white Democratic Party members to help me out there. In the meantime, I wasn't aware of it, but my Republican opponent went out and said, look, he pulled a clipping from the Pine Bluff commercial in 1963 when I was elected state secretary of the NAACP. He said, look, Wilkins is a member of the NAACP and he's been pushing things. Okay. I still carried all my precincts, three of the white precincts, and I almost carried the other. But he got a bigger vote than I had anticipated because I expected to get at least 65% of the white vote in the four all-white precincts. But I found that he had some people working for him out there, and he went out himself. Then he came back and told the blacks that I had supported some bigoted candidates, you know, that I was with the white people. So he pulled one on me, but I didn't spend anything. Perhaps that's why I got 41% of the vote out there the first day.
But you still got a majority of the white vote?
Yes, I got, in the November general election, I got 41% against the gentleman who lived out there. And see, that area has been considered a white citizen council, Ku Klux Klan area, the Dalhousie School District. Case has been in court longer than any other desegregation court. In fact, federal court still has it under advisement, under its jurisdiction. So you have but there's another factor working in my favor. We got a lot of labor people out there, too, and they were helping me. I had support from organized labor because of my stand in the Constitutional Convention and this kind of thing. So I did have labor support, and that helped me out tremendously. You have a lot of union people out there.
Did you go talk to those union people, though, yourself?
Yes, I talked to the union people. Many of them contacted me ahead of time, and I talked with them. We had meetings. Yes. The Trade Council, I've made every meeting at the Trade Council. It's a countywide organization.
And that was during the campaign?
Yes.
So you were campaigning actively among whites
right.
in the labor movement?
Right. Right.
What I was getting at that media sort of thing is that blacks, I think, tend to trust certain sources of information better than others.
Right.
What I was trying to get at, you know, is television seen as more believable than newspapers, or is the church organization more believable than news radio? I mean, is there any way to kind of rank order that? Which media are the most believable by blacks?
I think on the basis of what we've already said about the church, with exception of personal contact and what support you can get from some ministers, I wouldn't rank it. I'd say the radio is... we got excellent results from the radio and also the direct mail campaign. Now, I haven't decided which is more important, but I know that during the direct mail campaign, that I got a lot of response. I found a lot of my constituents didn't receive any mail from anybody except a bill or something, you know? And that they were, I've heard a lot of comments, you know, I got a letter from Wilkins, you know, and I'm going to vote for him. You know, he sent me a letter. And like right now, every day, if anybody gets ill in my district and is admitted to the hospital or somebody in the family died, I send them a card, a sympathy card from the Wilkins family if it's a death. If somebody's ill and he's released from the hospital, I send them a get well card on my stationery. So but we do that every day. And we catch up on the weekends on Monday, so for Saturday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And I found that, you know, we've gotten tremendous results.
So you think radio and mail are the best ways to communicate
right.
with blacks?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Do they trust newspapers?
Yes, we have one black newspaper, but
I'm not talking. I'm talking about the white newspaper.
Well, generally, but
now, when it comes to endorsing or recommending candidates, that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, I think it certainly the commercial endorsed me, that helped me out tremendously in the black community. But because of the intelligence level, a lot of my constituents, they're not going to read the editorial page. They don't read it. Some of them don't take daily newspaper. I think when I worked at the newspaper 15 years ago, we did a survey and only 15% of the blacks subscribed to the commercial. So I would say now there's probably no more than 40%, if that high. So obviously you couldn't get a lot of mileage out of that. Because some of the homes I have, a lot of old people, and I have a lot of poor people in my district. And so the newspaper wouldn't be the best way now. You can reach some of them through the black newspaper, but it's... There's limited circulation in it.
Do you get a lot of requests or letters and so on, communications from blacks outside of this district?
Yes, I mean, all the time. Mostly telephone calls that help somebody in some way, of jobs and something they're interested in, this kind of thing. They haven't had time to learn, even the whites, about district lines and so forth. And so I go ahead and honor anything I can do. For example, I got more calls from whites on the circuit breaker law that we passed in the last session of the legislature, tax exemption for people 65 and over on the homestead. Well, I got more calls from whites, and I had a girl to help them fill them out than I did from blacks. And this was all over, not just in my district. And I had to put on the radio as public service announcement because a lot of people, black and white, weren't applying. And I also put out some handbills in the grocery stores and at the churches so that they would be aware of the circuit breaker law. And in fact, we didn't have very many people apply statewide, so they extended the deadline from May the 15th to November the 15th because of this fact. So I would say, yes, they tend to ignore district land. Then I got my biggest problem is I get a lot of calls that I have nothing that aren't in my bailiwick. For example, about city services. And sometimes I try to solve those or turn them over to somebody that can. And I tell them they got a black alderman, you know, call him, but they call me. And then, you know, you have difficulty explaining these people. You know, it's not your bailiwick. But we try to do whatever we can for them. And also in terms of these ministers, in my district I've maintained close contact with the majority of them. I have about approximately 15 churches, and 10 of them are good-sized churches, you know, 100 or over. And I don't think I have about one minister that probably is not friendly to me. I have some others that are sort of, you know, he's fundamentally marginal. But I've also, they've worked in the community, so what I've done with these older guys who worked in the community, I've gotten citations from the legislature for them. That made them feel good, you know, something to go up on the wall, this kind of thing. So I think we're in pretty good shape with them. That's one of the reasons we didn't have an opponent this time, either in the Democratic primary nor in November general election.
When you went to Little Rock to serve in that legislature for the first time, did it turn out the way you thought it was going to turn out?
Yes, basically because, you know, I was familiar with the legislative process, and each semester I'd carry my students up when the legislature was in session, you know, to observe them. Plus, I didn't have much of a problem because most of the legislators, I already knew them, having worked in the Democratic Party, served on the State Rules Committee, which I'm still serving on, and worked in various campaigns. One time or another, I bumped into practically all of them, at least 75% of them. So I didn't have any, you know, I didn't have any problem about it. It's just that I couldn't get some of my legislation through, especially one major piece of legislation that was ward election of aldermen. But other than that, I got every bill that I sponsored or co-sponsored through. That was the only bill that I didn't get through. I think we did either sponsored or co-sponsored about 7 or 8 bills. So,
how do you assess Bumpus as governor?
I think he's a good governor. I think his administration was good, and he helped implement the reorganization plan that Rockefeller had started. And of course, a lot of the things he advocated, Rockefeller had advocated, and he couldn't get them through because of Republican governor, Democratic legislature. But overall, I'd have to assess his performance as good, you know, very good. And one of the things that impressed me with him, I didn't particularly like him at first when he first ran, but one thing that impressed me with him is that when the cities and counties were clamoring for 7% of the general revenue, they wanted a fixed percent in the budget, he stood up to them. He had the county judges, all these city officials descending on him, and he held his ground. And when they wanted to put a lot of money into buildings and ignore human needs. And I remember one day he said, I wouldn't give a damn if I was whether I'm the next U.S. Senator, country lawyer in Charleston, or re-elected to the governorship. He said, I'm not going to stand idly by and see him rape the treasury. And he said, buildings are fine, but human needs are more important. And he stuck to that, and he advocated a whole lot of things dealing with human needs. So for that reason, I'm high on human needs. So for that reason, you know, I think he...
Were you satisfied with this level of sensitivity toward blacks and needs of blacks?
No. I haven't been, but we've talked about it. We talked about it during the last session, and we talk about it all the time, but after the election, he is we had a long conference, and he's going to place women and blacks and women in that order on boards and commission. I have a list of everything. I carried it up to him. It's going to become vacant between now and December 31st. He's going to emphasize that. Now, of course, I can understand he didn't get very much of the black vote when he was first elected. Rockefeller got about, as I say, about 92%. And plus, he's from an area where there might be one or two black families, and he was depending on other people. And there were some people in his administration, that, in terms of appointments and this kind of thing, that demonstrated they'd been anti-black when they worked in other capacities. And I think this was one factor. You know, obviously, a government can't tend to all of the appointments and so forth. And then I'm sure that his people have made a lot of promises But with the black vote he got this time, I don't doubt that he's going to be censured, and that's what he has promised. And so far, I found him to be a man of his word. So I don't doubt that he's going to make us a good senator, and he's going to be sensitive to the needs of blacks.
How about the charge that he didn't place any blacks in significant positions in the executive office? There's one black in the governor's office, and he's in the basement.
That's true. Well, I have to say, the evidence indicates that's true. And I don't know, you know, why.
Do you think that'll change when you...
Now, that's not true now. He has another, Cora McHenry added another one earlier this year. He has Iggers, and he has a black lady who will probably work with him in his new capacity as senator in his office.
What does she do?
She's in charge of education generally, education aid for education.
But you think there's going to be a whole lot of appointment activity for blacks and women in the next 7 or 8 months?
Yes, in the next, 6 months.
Yeah, 6 months.
And we've talked to the governor-elect, a Democratic nominee, and he's going to follow the same policy. So
have you talked to him?